I'm Sonia Jones, and I'm going to be talking about our integrated project where we're building capacity and partnership to create food systems change. So we're one of the food environment projects. I have no relationships to disclose about this project. I work for the Center for Research in Nutrition and Health Disparities at the University of South Carolina. We work on food systems and food security issues with a lot of different faculty and lots of different projects. We have a symposium every March. We'd love to have you come down. It's lovely in South Carolina. I'm going to tell you an ethnographic story because I'm going to be talking about the ethnographic component of this study. I got really excited when the Prevention Fund became part of the ACA and when these strategies came out from CDC. We're going to start to change policy, systems, and environment in communities in a very systematic way, and we're going to call it public health prevention. And I also got a little nervous because I've spent a long time now trying to evaluate policy. So I started out a long time ago looking at the effects of SNAP on obesity, because I'm a strong believer in SNAP. I grew up participating in SNAP, and I think it's a really important program. So let's demonstrate the great benefits it's having. And I started out in women, and so you guys probably know this story, right? It looks like if there is any evidence that SNAP is associated with weight gain, it's probably in women, and there's a little bit, and our data show it too, that women gain a little bit more weight if they participate in SNAP. That's not the result I wanted. I wanted to show that SNAP was protective. And then I said, well, I'm going to switch to school food policy. So I had a look at what all the states were doing around passing competitive food rules, and in particular thinking about sweetened beverage rules. And I took all these policy models. Did states pass legislation that passed strict regulation? Did they use procedural models like those lovely wellness policies that came out in 2007? Were states also encouraging districts to do that? Were they doing other things? And so here I'm showing you the change in BMI Z-scores by the types of policy strategies that were going on in different states using ECLSK data. Again, not the story I wanted to tell, right? Policy is having no impact on the differences between where adolescents started and where they ended up in these states. So I was getting a little frustrated. But before I was a researcher, I was an organizer, so I had to go back to my roots and think about why is policy systems and environment change not working? We did this great project when I was in Tennessee where we worked in partnership with kids, and we had them assist their school food environment, and we had them come up with a policy change, and we taught them to advocate. And so in one school, this worked out really, really well. We had engaged faculty. They were very open to the kids creating this kind of change, and they were really excited to see the systems changes happening. So they were very receptive to the kids' advocacy. In the other school, they were happy to have us teach the kids leadership skills, and they were not so happy to have to share their teacher salad bar, to change the processes in their lunchroom. In that school, the kids also chose a policy of teacher role modeling, so they did a play about the bad teacher practices. And we didn't see such big changes in that school in terms of what the kids were eating. Their policy strategies were not as effective. So this study and the other work I was doing was reminding me that community engagement and effective organizing are incredibly important to making these policy systems and environment change strategies work. And we have to partner with those people that we like to call the target populations, right? The people who lack access to food, the kids who we're trying to protect from obesity, they have to be actively engaged in choosing what it is we're going to do, and they have to be doing that in a supportive environment. So luckily, USDA agreed with me that we really need to develop an evaluation model based on really understanding what the change process is at the community level for policy systems and environment change. This is a much bigger project. I'm only going to talk about the piece of it today that's us catalyzing that kind of change. And I'm only going to give you one example because we're really early into this process. So we're catalyzing change in four communities using a community organizing model to create the kinds of policy systems and environment change we believe should prevent childhood obesity. I'm not actually looking to see if we're preventing childhood obesity yet. I really want to understand what questions we ask in evaluation so that we're more effective, and what strategies we use to create that change. So we're doing these ethnographic case studies in the Midlands area of South Carolina. We're working in the counties that are highlighted in green. The ones that are white are counties that we could have worked in based on the criteria that we set up at the beginning. We sought to partner with coalitions that were receiving those prevention funds to do food systems work. So they were looking at that list of food system strategies. They have some kind of funding. They had already chosen to do food systems work for childhood obesity prevention, and we wanted to catalyze that in a particular way. And that particular way is using traditional community organizing. So we're going through a cycle of really working with them to do one-on-ones and house meetings, very traditional door-knocking kind of community organizing. Now, how many of you, I just want to ask, have knocked on your neighbor's door in the last month? Good. And what did you ask them to do? Did you ask them to come out to a city council meeting with you? One of you did. Good. Oh, you trick-or-treated. You asked them for candy. That's so true, Laura. I didn't even think of that. Yeah, well, this process, I didn't anticipate just how difficult this first step was. Even in rural communities where we assume that people are more tight-knit, in low-income communities, it was really, really hard. It's been very, very hard for us to build base in communities because people are afraid to knock on each other's door. We've had to do a lot of group therapy to get out in our communities and talk to each other. Once we do that, and we better understand what issues are underlying creating this food systems change that the coalition's interested in, we do research to help cut and analyze those issues. And I'll give you some examples of this in a minute. We develop second-line leaders, so I might knock on your door once, but I'm going to want you to knock on this on the door the next time, right? And you're going to need to be able to talk about why you want food systems change in your community. So that's the leadership development piece. And then we demonstrate our power through action, and we celebrate. We think about what we've done, evaluate. So these groups are doing research as part of the work that we're doing, but the research they're doing is going toward having better relationships so that the next time they want to create the next piece of their food systems change campaign, they have a better base to work with. So the four campaigns we're working on, and I'm sorry, that's hard to read. I'm just going to tell you what it says. In Richland and Lexington County, we hosted a food summit about a year ago. What came out of that food summit is we really lack a distribution system. We've got a lot of gardeners and farmers who are growing fruits and vegetables that could be getting into schools. We have a lot of African-American farmers that have just a little bit of land. They lack access to effective distribution systems. So we need a food hub in that community, and that's the campaign they're working on. In another community, the library and the town council and others came together in a coalition. They want to put a community garden right in the middle of town and have people come out and grow food and redistribute that food, work with kids in the local elementary school to better understand where their food is coming from and do tasting. I'm going to talk about the far right one because the Chester one I'm going to give you more details on. We decided to partner with the statewide coalition after about a year because it became really clear that they also lacked skills around organizing. We have a statewide coalition that organizes all of these county coalitions that I'm talking about, and they want to do community organizing, but they knew very little about issue development, even at the state level. And we have money available to SNAP families in our state to double up SNAP dollars if you can spend the money at farmers markets. So we need to take implementation strategies through that statewide coalition to make sure that money gets out into our communities and gets spent effectively. So the example I'm going to talk through is the example of a partnership in a small rural community where they had done the legwork to bring an indoor farmers market with an indoor community kitchen, but you know that was just step one. So how do we get SNAP families into that market to feel like they have some ownership and commitment to shopping at that market and so that it's meeting their food needs? So in Chester, South Carolina, they wrote this master plan in 2008, and it's really interesting. They had done this great analysis already in this small community. It's 1,000 people. $218 million in retail leakage a year. So everybody's leaving Chester to shop someplace else. So it's all kinds of stuff. It's not just food. You buy furniture, clothes outside of Chester. So they really wanted to develop key downtown industries that would keep people in their community. And when we went to talk to the coalition, they said, you know, Chester is great. You can meet all of us here. The same 8 people do everything. We are creating all the change in Chester. Or lack of change in Chester. The food system dilemma that they identified is they had leveraged all these resources for this beautiful indoor farmers market, and they had gotten a city that's about 200 miles away to give them the industrial equipment for a community kitchen. They really saw this as an opportunity to build businesses and to get people developing job skills and developing products that they could be selling at the market. But they have farmers who, you know, they say our young farmers are 80. And they really prefer selling to Charlotte, which is about an hour from Chester, to selling to people in Chester. So they'd rather capture that high-end niche market if they're going to grow food rather than selling to people in Chester. So the coalition really wanted to figure out this dilemma. How do we keep that food in our community and make it affordable? So what they asked us to do, the catalyzing part of this, is, well, let's get all of the retail power of SNAP consumers in this community. 84% of people living in Chester County participate in SNAP or have in the past year. So it's a very low-income community, tremendous buying power if we could keep it in the community. So we started out with some base building, and we engaged people initially by doing photo voice. So this is a picture that somebody took in a restaurant in Chester. And when they came back, I don't know if you can tell, there's a little pink elbow of a little girl there. We didn't want to get faces in these pictures. So the person who took this picture said, you know, here's what's happening with families in Chester. The parents are modeling for the child, eating the only food that we really have available to us, because our food is leaving, and we leave to buy our food too. So from that photo voice, a group called Organic Helpers formed. They set up their own campaign goals. They're doing gardening. They're growing some of their own food. I'm kind of skipping ahead to what they're about. These are all families that have school-aged children that participate in SNAP, that don't have access to a full-time job. So they're working really hard to build a community-based organization in Chester that's around their food system issues. Thank you. They've worked in partnership with the coalition to get the city to fund a manager for the market in Chester. And so an example of how they did that is they were doing their photo voice group. The coalition went without them to city council to ask for this market manager to run the community kitchen, and city council turned them down. They said, well, sorry, we don't have the money. And then they came back and told us, the same 8 people, they came back and told us it didn't work. And we said, well, let us help. So Organic Helpers went out, did their door-knocking campaign. They got a petition. They turned out a bunch of people at city council. City council said, okay, we don't know enough about community kitchens. How about we do a tour of another community kitchen? So the city paid for city council members to drive up to another city that had a community kitchen. We said, that's good. We want our Organic Helpers to be able to go too, so we'll buy another bus or rent another bus to go alongside them. The short end of the story is city council heard about our bus and said, well, we don't need to fund. We'll just put our people on that bus. But wait, there aren't enough seats. So at 11 o'clock at night, before we're leaving for the community kitchen, they call all of our people that have worked so hard for this petition, low-income African-American people, and they tell them they don't have a seat on the bus. Yeah. And so that this is a beautiful opportunity for community organizing, right? Because they got the opportunity to say, we built enough power to ask this question and get city council to listen to us, and then they took our seat on the bus, so let's ask for another tour. Let's ask for the opportunity to continue being a part of this. So the short story is they did get another tour, and they have their manager now because they exercise their power and they push a little bit harder. Now, this is food systems change and engaging in a way that just doesn't show up when I'm trying to evaluate data from a national level, right? But these are the kinds of things that we need to know about if we're going to do policy systems and environment change and evaluate it effectively. So I would say the themes from all our campaigns is that it's really, really hard in this age to get people out and talking to each other, and it's critical. It's the most important work we'll be doing in communities is getting people to talk to each other about how we change the food system. And that the coalitions find it extremely important and very difficult to share their power on these issues. And families who have children who are at risk of obesity, lack access to food, are an asset. They bring a lot to the table. They have a lot to offer to all of us when we're working for policy systems and environment change. These are our partners up there, our community organizer, and our staff person at USC who's done this work. So I'm happy to take your questions. So we're in month 14 of this whole project, and yes, Chester does have a farmer's market, and yes, at six at that market, yeah, and they're all 80 or older. So, and one of the organizing issues that's emerged, something that our group is working on now, is that some of the farmers are really hesitant to have SNAP participants come to the market. Right. Well, there's that issue, and but we've through the market come up with this wooden token system, so it's a little bit faster. The market assumes a lot of the financial burden, but it's also there are pre-existing systems of oppression in all of these communities, right? So farmers are just a little bit better off than the folks living in town who don't have any kind of job.
I don't know how long your growing season is in South Carolina.
All year.
Issue of worrying about the non-growing season time, but what about non-foods that aren't grown in South Carolina?
Like bananas?
Bananas, pineapple, tomatoes, plantains, you know, it's kind of ethnic foods that a lot of food populations really want.
I haven't really thought very much about that. Most of the farmers market initiatives that are trying to focus on all local or South Carolina products typically put up a 50-50 rule. So half of everything you sell needs to come from your own farm.
Okay. And then they can still use farmers market coupons?
Right.
And where?
Different markets do or don't take the voucher system.
So as you said, evaluating the local success, qualitative data, communicating the success.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that really need to show the impact on that community
for
systems and markets. So what ideas do you have on that in order to be able to have funders and decision makers at the federal level to understand the work and effort that goes into
right.
So,
I mean, what I would really like to see is that at the end of this, we've got a model of how this change happens. We've gotten enough experience with these small issue campaigns that we can say, you know, these are the components of change, of creating policy systems and environment change. Now let's evaluate systematically to what extent those components are there and they're having an impact on the way people are eating, how much food is being sold in the market. You know, there are a variety of outcomes that we could look at before we ever got to kids' BMI. So those are my thoughts.
With the community and local gardens that you have you at all tried to implement their
There's a whole farm-to-school program in South Carolina that was funded through the Communities Putting Prevention to Work money, and we did a separate evaluation on that, which I'd be happy to share with you. So
anyone have questions for any of us up here? We want to open it up.
I did have my question. In fact, my question was around they're not weighted. The criteria exist across items. Some of the criteria exist across items so that if they meet a few criteria, they might actually influence change in a variety of different areas of interest. So we have integrated the conditions across the primary items that we wanted to measure. Meal service equipment, which is actually the equipment that is in the cafeteria, not the equipment that's in the food service or food production.
So the question was about food service equipment, and I was clarifying that the equipment is meal service equipment, so things like salad bars and the milk distribution equipment, you know, where they actually keep the beverages and condiments and whatever else is available directly to the students, not where the cafeteria workers are working. And as far as the tool being available, the tool is in review, the paper, and it will be available. We do have a website. It's Grow Healthy Kids and Communities at Oregon State University, Grow HKC, and all of our tools that we have developed through this funding are either explained further, and there's contact information, and if anybody has an interest in perhaps using these tools in other research, we'd be happy to talk with you about that. Well, fortunately, right now the data are reflecting that healthier students learn better, and so as long as we can solidify that relationship, that would be the incentive for school districts. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Award this year because they had low error rates in their SNAP applications from USDA. It was $1.86 million. Typically, the legislature does not say how our Department of Social Services has to spend that money, but this year, through some strategic advocacy and some small research projects we had in the state, we were able to say, we really want you to spend that money making fresh fruits and vegetables more available. So, now the challenge is figuring out how we get that money into the hands of SNAP participants in the state. DSS director's idea was that equals about $2.17 per participant, so I'm just going to write a paper coupon to everybody and put it in the mail. We didn't like that idea. But if she does do that, I'm going to have an Apple campaign. You guys will see it. Everybody in South Carolina will buy an Apple. So right now what we're talking about is the money actually getting moved over to the Department of Health and being distributed through some kind of granting system to farmers markets to double up. Those of you who are familiar with Double Bucks programs know how much money this is that we have to spend, right? I mean, it's huge compared to the other Double Up programs that are out there.
Yeah. So you'll be looking to, if they've just gotten that money, so you're really looking at how to use that money in 2014?
Yeah, it has to. We have to spend it by the end of next summer.
Question for Laura. You mentioned something about oral sensory related to neophobia. I know you said you're exploring that, but can you kind of explain that a little bit more?
So
My colleague is in OT, occupational therapy, and looks at sensory processing as part of this. And then my other colleague, who's the feeding expert, we're looking at both of them work a little bit in autism. And because Head Start kids are a little more at risk, we're really looking at some of those characteristics and how they may impact the neophobia, which then might impact dietary intake. So it is exploratory. There's one study that's come out of the UK, but there's nothing else on it. So it's become kind of a timely piece for us to continue to look at. So when we mean oral sensory, it's gagging, it's texture, it's kids that are very sensitive to hot, cold, or the texture, so they will avoid certain foods simply because it's not pleasurable for them. Jerry.
I had a question. I really liked all that you're doing, Sonia, and I was wondering, do you think that there's any way that the community organizers are going to focus on child care and trying to bring child care into the food hub?
Into the food hub in particular? I think that's open right now. Right now we're doing all of the work with farmers, so to get them organized enough to be prepared to distribute their food.
So it is 4 o'clock, and I know it's that time of day where we're all kind of trying to wake up. So thank you very much for coming.